During this episode of Banner Health's Making the Round podcast, we'll be highlighting a special three-part series discussing screening, prevention, and the treatment of melanoma. In today's episode, we'll be discussing surgical management of melanoma. Making the Rounds dives into medical topics with those who know them best, healthcare providers. My name is Bridget, and I'll be your host for today's episode. If you're new to our podcast, thank you for tuning in. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. With me today is Dr. Mark Gimbel, surgical oncologist specializing in cutaneous oncology and medical director at the T.W. Lewis Melanoma Center of Excellence at Banner MD Anderson Cancer Center. Thank you, Dr. Gimbel, for joining me today, and welcome to Making the Rounds.
Thank you, Bridget, for having me.
Well, we're excited about this topic today and excited to share with our listeners the surgical management of melanoma. Dr. Gimbel, can you share with us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So as you said, I'm a surgical oncologist. I'm general surgery trained and then did a surgical fellowship in surgical oncology, which was another 2 years in training, looking at a lot of the cancer specialties. I really enjoyed the cutaneous aspect part of it. And when I came out to Arizona to help set up the cancer center, I put a focus into melanoma, because there's a lot of it we see in melanoma. And it was a lack of care here for people who knew what to do for melanoma. So it was a great area that I could really specialize in and build it at the cancer center.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. Dr. Gimbel, can you share with us, what are the different types of melanoma?
It's a good question. So there's a couple of different ways to look at it. You can identify melanoma based on where it's located or how it looks under the microscope. When we talk about how it looks under the microscope, there are a few characteristics that are seen that the pathologist will identify after a biopsy. Those are superficial spreading, nodular, amelanotic, desmoplastic, other features that you can see under the microscope. And then there's acral-lentiginous as well as subungual. The subungual and the acral-lentiginous are based on the location. Acral is going to be on the palms of the soles or the feet. The subunguals are going to be under nails. Then there's also mucosal, and those are going to be in a whole separate location, such as rectum, sinus, vagina, and those are a whole different etiology, which we're not going to touch much on today. And we're going to look more at the cutaneous or the skin types today.
Thank you, Dr. Gimbel. Can you explain why identifying melanoma early is so important?
Absolutely. So I think we need to take a step back and look to see why does melanoma happen? And then we can talk about why identifying it early is so important. Melanoma or any skin cancer, or most skin cancers for that matter, are due to ultraviolet radiation exposure. And this happens throughout a lifetime. Radiation exposure that you received as a child who got sunburns at the beach. There are a lot of younger adults and some older who use tanning beds and get unnatural doses of radiation. All of this exposure that you get throughout your lifetime leads to a critical mass where the cells within the skin, in the top layer of the skin called the epidermis, start to mutate. If they mutate and they stay just in this top layer of the skin, well, that's a very early skin cancer, and that's called in situ. So we can see melanoma in situ, squamous cell carcinoma in situ, or even basal cell carcinoma in situ. These words that I'm using are based on the cell of origin. So melanoma starts from melanocytes. Those are the pigment-producing cells in the skin. Then you have squamous cells and you have basal cells, and those are other types of cells within the epidermis. And all of those can turn cancerous if they get enough radiation throughout a lifetime. As those cells start to mutate, they form cancer, and as that cancer grows, it can start to spread. And once it starts to spread, at least for melanoma, now you're dealing with a whole different beast. So if these cancers are picked up early, when they just start to form, they can be removed and patients can be cured of surgery. So it's imperative to identify these cancers early because it can, A, save lives, and B, prevent significant disfiguring surgeries from happening. When we look at squamous cells and basal cell carcinomas, while those can mutate and they can grow, those are more of a local phenomenon. Melanoma, as it grows and as it grows deeper, has a much higher risk of spread, and that's where we need to start doing more invasive procedures to assess for that.
Dr. Gimbel, can you share with us the importance of identifying melanoma early and how it's key in avoiding disfiguring surgeries?
Absolutely. With melanoma, we care how deep in the skin it grows, because the deeper it grows, the increased risk there is for spread. But we know that when a melanoma grows down into the skin, there's also lateral spread as well. So for any melanoma that is identified, we perform a surgery called a wide local excision, What does that mean? It means we need to get normal tissue around the site that's in question. So if I have a melanoma that has grown into the skin up to a millimeter in depth, I need to take a centimeter margin of normal tissue around that. And that leads to a defect of about the size of a quarter. You can imagine the size of a quarter isn't necessarily that big of a defect, but we've got to get closure, and that means we have to do an ellipse, and we're now making a longer incision where a wide local excision for a centimeter in size leads to about a 3-inch scar. So it's not an insignificant surgery to perform. And if you can imagine, if that's on the scalp, if that's on the shin, the pretibial location, trying to get skin closure can be quite challenging. And this is where some of the disfiguring surgery can come into play. Now, if the tumor is deeper, say it's deeper than 2 millimeters in depth, I now need to take a 2-centimeter margin. So now we're talking something about the size of a silver dollar defect that gets made for your skin cancer. And now getting that close becomes a much even bigger problem. On the back, on the thorax, easier to get that close, but now we're dealing with a 5-inch incision. Again, in these problematic areas, that's challenging. So when dealing with some of the cartilaginous areas, such as the nose or the ears, that becomes even more disfiguring and harder to manage.
When might there be a need for reconstruction?
So reconstruction is going to be based on patient-specific features. First off, where it's located, what's the patient's skin like? Do they have a lot of laxity in their skin? Is it an area that it's really tight? So if I'm concerned about getting my incision closed, or I feel that it won't be closed and it's high risk of having a chronic wound, I will send to the plastic surgeon. And that could lead to either flap rotations where they take normal skin and rotate it. That could lead to skin grafts where they take skin from different area on the body and transpose it to the wound. Again, in cartilaginous areas, that could lead to more elegant reconstructive techniques to try to make these areas more cosmetically appealing. So you can identify these cancers early before they get deeper, the surgery is less and less. And for a melanoma in situ, which as I mentioned earlier, is just cancer within the epidermis that hasn't broken down into the deeper layers, we only need to do a 5-millimeter margin of normal tissue, so much smaller. So if you can find it early, smaller incisions, smaller scars. If you find it later, it's more progressed, bigger surgery, bigger scars, reconstruction.
And identifying melanoma early is key to avoiding disfiguring surgeries and identifying the appropriate reconstruction path. If the cancer spreads past that 5-millimeter area and now spreads into the lymph nodes, how is that managed?
So when I see a patient who comes to me with a melanoma, again, the first thing I do is gauge the depth of the tumor. The deeper the tumor, the increased risk there is for spread. We use a threshold of 0.8 millimeters. So any tumor that grows into the skin less than 0.8 millimeters, that risk of spread is so low that we don't check for it. But at 0.8 millimeters and above, that risk of spread is now increased where we would want to assess for spread. What's so magical about 0.8 millimeters? Nothing really, but the studies have shown that there's about a 5% risk of spread at that threshold. And we as a medical community feel that 5% is an adequate depth to start performing other procedures to look for spread. So when melanoma spreads, it typically spreads through what are called the skin lymphatics. And those are fluid channels that run all throughout your skin and drain to lymph nodes. Well, there's three areas on the body where the skin lymph nodes are. For the head and neck, they usually run along the jugular in the neck. For the upper torso and the arms, they're in the axilla or the armpit. And for the lower torso and the legs, they're in the groin. So let's just say, for example, I have a melanoma on my upper arm. If this is a 1-millimeter melanoma, the risk of spread is probably somewhere between 5 and 10%. And I would be assessed for a sentinel lymph node biopsy to assess for spread. What is a sentinel lymph node biopsy? Well, essentially, it's the first draining lymph node. So if we look at the armpit, you can have anywhere from 20 to 40 lymph nodes in your armpit, but everybody's a little bit different. However, if the melanoma is going to spread, it doesn't spread to all of them equally. It'll spread to one or two lymph nodes first, and we call those the sentinel lymph nodes. They're the sentinels or the guardians of the rest of the lymph node. If you can assess that first draining lymph node to see if there's melanoma within that lymph node, then you don't have to assess the rest, because if there's no melanoma in the first lymph node, there's not going to be any in the subsequent lymph nodes. Now, if you do assess that first lymph node or that sentinel lymph node and there is melanoma, well, that leads a whole cascade afterwards in terms of what needs to be done, which we can talk about in a bit if you'd like. So if I have a 2-millimeter melanoma, if I have a 4-millimeter melanoma on my arm, the risks are now going up and up and up for having increased risk of spread to those lymph nodes. So that's why we use that 0.8 millimeter as a threshold, and anything above that would indicate that the patient would require a sentinel lymph node biopsy to assess for spread.
Dr. Gimbel, you mentioned the sentinel lymph node. What is the recommendation in the biopsy and dissection of the sentinel lymph node versus clinically identifiable node?
So a sentinel lymph node is identified at the time of surgery. And by definition, there's occult disease, meaning it's something that you can't pick up on a scan or you can't pick up by evaluating somebody clinically. You don't feel anything. It's only after you take the lymph node out and you find out that there's melanoma within that lymph node, that patient now has sentinel lymph node positive disease. However, if somebody comes to my clinic and when I do my clinical exam, I feel that they have a palpable lymph node in their axilla, well, this is no longer microscopic disease. This is macroscopic disease, and they now have no longer occult, but overt disease, if you will. Now that we know that there is identified disease within the axilla, within this lymph node, that means the patient already has stage 3 disease. So it's already spread to the lymph nodes. We're not looking for it in that sentinel node. We now know this patient has it. And so now we're dealing with someone who has progressive disease or a more advanced stage of disease. This would necessitate that patient to get treatment because it's now in your system. It's gone from the local area to the regional area. The first thing we would need to do is to assess to make sure it's not distant, so they don't have metastatic disease or stage 4. That would lead to scans such as a PET scan, even MRI of the brain, to assess for any evidence of spread beyond the site of the lymph nodes. If we don't see any evidence of metastatic disease, and I'll forego talking about that because that will be with Dr. Mahmood, who would be talking about that later on, we're just going to talk about stage 3 disease. So if it's only in the lymph nodes, standard of care used to be that if somebody presented with disease in their lymph nodes, we would take them for what's called a completion lymph node dissection, or take all the lymph nodes out of the armpit. Well, the lymph nodes serve a vital role. They're part of the immune system. They're filters to filter the fluid that comes from the arm, from the chest. And if you take out all those lymph nodes, there's obviously going to be some side effects to that. We can see lymphedema, where patients can get swelling of the arm. There's nerves that run through the axilla that, if they get injured, can lead to weakness in the latissimus muscle. It can cause what's known as a winged scapula, where the shoulder blade can start to flip out. While that doesn't have necessarily functional implications, you can imagine if one shoulder blade is flat and one shoulder blade is winged out, that can be quite uncomfortable to live a life like that. So there are complications that can happen with taking all the lymph nodes out. What we try to do is minimize some of those complications and make the surgery a better surgery. How do we do that? Well, we like to shrink things down. And as much as I like to cut things out, I know that once cancer has gotten into the lymphatics, it's now a systemic disease, and we need to treat somebody with systemic therapy. And we've moved away from chemotherapy because chemotherapy doesn't work for melanoma. We now use immunotherapy. And essentially what immunotherapy is, it's having your body go after cancer cells. Well, why doesn't that normally happen? Well, because cancer cells are your own body growing. And if your own body started attacking yourself all the time, well, that's significant autoimmune issues that could happen. So there are breaks on your immune system so the body doesn't go after itself. This class of medicine, immunotherapy, actually takes those breaks off the immune system where it can now identify cancer cells and go after and attack cancer cells. So our standard now, where we treat people before surgery, if they have clinically evident lymph nodes in their armpit or wherever, is that we give them a few cycles of immunotherapy. That allows, A, the immune system to be primed for the cancer that's there and to even shrink the tumors. And some people get complete responses even from that, meaning the cancer completely disappears. However, we still, at this point in time, need to go and verify that there's no cancer cells left because we don't know for sure that someone has had a complete response. So then we would go in and remove the rest of those lymph nodes and they would get assessed through a pathologist. And we know if they had a complete response, there's a chance that they could be cured from their stage 3 disease. And if they haven't, we've now taken out those cancer cells where we've now achieved local control and reduced the risk that it can grow back in the armpit.
What is the role of surgery for metastatic melanoma, and what stage requires surgery?
So metastatic melanoma, by definition, is stage 4. We don't typically consider surgery for patients who present with stage 4 disease because we know that that's not going to impact someone's survival. Now, when will we consider surgery for someone who has stage 4 melanoma? Early on, we would consider it for symptomatic lesions. When melanoma spreads, a lot of times it will spread to the intestines. This can lead to bleeding. This can lead to obstruction and even pain. And so it's reasonable to take someone to the operating room to remove intestinal melanoma spots to try to prevent them from having significant problems or relieve the problems that they're having. Melanoma can also spread into the dermis around other parts of the body and can develop these big fungating lesions that can grow through and be painful and get infected and bleed. And so it's reasonable to think surgery would be an option there as well. However, to go back to where we are with immunotherapy, we know that patients who are treated and their cancers go down, even with widespread disease, and they have a near resolution of their cancer, but they may still have one or two areas where their cancer hasn't completely gone away. By removing the cancer at that time, we can still render them no evidence of disease and potentially even cure them. So in this new era with immunotherapy, it's changed how we manage patients who have widespread disease. And I would say there are a lot more patients I'm operating on now with initially presented with stage 4 disease who have done well with treatment. And now we can take the rest of their tumors out.
Dr. Gemble, here at Banner MD Anderson, we have some groundbreaking medicine. We are part of clinical trial research. We have some of the best surgeons in the country. Can you share with us what type of novel treatment are we doing here at Banner MD Anderson for melanoma cancer?
Well, the T.W. Lewis Melanoma Center of Excellence, I think we're fortunate to have a lot of resources to be able to look at this question and use cutting-edge treatments for our patients. We are able to open up a lot of clinical trials to assess new treatment pathways or new treatment medications for maybe not first line, but second or third line treatments for patients with metastatic melanoma. We are using injectable medications. We are using a medication called T-VEC or intralesional therapy for patients who present with in-transit disease or have nodules that grow on the arm, that you can actually treat those as well as treat other cancers within their body just by injecting that lesion. But I think one of the things that we've really grasped on and we're early adopters is treating patients with stage 3 disease and even stage 4 disease in a neoadjuvant approach, meaning treating them before they have any other interventions such as surgery or radiation. That way they get that treatment on board, and there's actually been some data to show that if you can treat somebody with the cancer in place, they will have better responses from an overall treatment standpoint, and then you can go and remove the cancer. And then if you continue to treat them afterwards, they will do better. On the other hand, if you treat somebody after you've taken out the cancer, you don't have that cancer to utilize as an immune library, if you will, where your body can now make all these immune cells towards the cancer. If you remove the cancer first, you just don't have that ability. So we feel that patients will get a much better outcome if we can treat them first. That's now becoming more standard and accepted, but I think we saw that early on. And working as a team, we decided that we wanted to manage our patients more aggressively up front, and then we can operate on them later. And it's been great for our patients. They've had really good outcomes. And overall, I think they're doing well.
Dr. Gemble, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today and educating us on the evidence-based strategies for surgical management of melanoma. Thank you for joining us.
Bridget, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for having me. And I'll be happy to take any questions if your audience wants to get in touch with me later.
Perfect. We appreciate that. If you want to learn more about melanoma care and the melanoma specialists at Banner MD Anderson Cancer Center, please visit us at bannerhealth.com/cancer for more information. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on Making the Rounds.